This morning. Yeah, peachy. I heard someone say peachy. Well, that's good. I guess that's doing good, unless you don't like peaches, but who doesn't like peaches? You don't like peach? No? Oh, man, it's got some non-peach likers over here. All right. All right, well, something else to divide us, I guess. Okay. All right, that's not good. I can't go off script. That's not good. We're going to be in the book of Acts for a little bit, and then we're going to be in the book of John for a little bit longer, and then we're going to be in the book of Philippians. So kind of throw your bookmarks in there, if you will. Acts, John, and Philippians is our goal. And we're talking about Jesus as King this morning. And in case you didn't know that, I'm glad you're here because you really need to know that. I'm assuming most of us know that, but I want to look at something interesting about Jesus being King. I think that's important for us to know. So that's our goal for this morning. So we'll start off in Acts chapter 17. And when we get to Acts chapter 17, we find Paul is in Thessalonica. And he's preaching to people in the synagogue. And he's talking about Jesus is the Christ. He's the Messiah. He's the anointed one, the chosen one, the one that's been prophesied about that's going to be king. Right, the king over Israel, but in turn, king over the world, king over everything. And he had some people get baptized. He had people become believers, and some good things happened there in Thessalonica. It said a large number of God-fearing Greeks and not a few prominent women. So not just some Jews that were baptized, but also some Greeks and some women who had some say-so around there. And so that's all good. Except when we get to verse 5, we find that there's some Jews, and when the author's writing this, Luke writes this, he would let you know that this probably would have been some Jewish leaders there in the synagogue. They didn't like all this. So I'll start reading in verse 5. It says, but the Jews were jealous. So they rounded up some bad characters from the marketplace, formed a mob, and started a riot in the city. They didn't like this. They didn't like what Paul was preaching. They didn't like that people were believing it. So they rounded up some bad characters and started a mob, gathered a mob and started a riot in the city. That's pretty impressive that they have the ability to do that. I don't know if they used money to do that. I'm assuming working with bad characters, that's probably what it took. But they actually started a riot to bring in the authorities because they didn't like what Paul was preaching. All right? So they started a riot in the city. They rushed to Jason's house, which Jason was a convert there. They rushed to Jason's house in search of Paul and Silas in order to bring them out to the crowd. But when they did not find them, they dragged Jason and some other brothers before the city officials. They don't find Paul and Silas, so they say, well, let's get these guys. They're holding them up. They're housing them. So they take Jason and some other brothers, and they bring them before the officials, and they shout. Here's what they shout in verse 6. These men who have caused trouble all over the world have now come here, and Jason has welcomed them into his house. They are all defying Caesar's decrees, saying that there is another king, one called Jesus. And that's the claim they're making, that they're defying Caesar's decrees, and they're claiming that there is another king, one called Jesus. And then when they hear this, the city officials, they're not happy about this. It says they're thrown into turmoil. And they make Jason and the others post bond to get out. And so that's what their claim is, that they're saying that there is another king. And that would have been what Paul would have been preaching, that no, Caesar is not king, right? Caesar's not king. He's not king over the world. He's not a son of the gods, right? Jesus is the Son of God. Jesus is king, okay? That's the message. Nothing new to us hearing that. But it is interesting the Jewish leaders' reaction to that, to say, no, Jesus is not king. So we believe that Caesar is king, which, it would have been very hard for them to say that. It shows you how much they disliked Jesus, that they disliked the teachings and preachings of Paul, that they would actually side with Caesar over Paul, over one of their Jewish brothers. They definitely didn't like Jesus. All right, so Jesus is king at this point in the book of Acts. He is king. He sits on the throne. He went to the cross. He died. He resurrected. He is king. But let's backtrack to a time before that. Let's go to John chapter 6. In John chapter 6, we find here the story of Jesus feeding the 5,000. And you know this story, right? Jesus is teaching them, the people, and they're hungry. And they're like, Jesus, we got to send these people away. He's like, will you give them some food? We don't have any food. Oh, what do we got? We have some fish and we have some bread. And Jesus miraculously prays over it. He multiplies it and he feeds 5,000 men, not including the women and children. An amazing story. All right, that's what happens in John chapter 6. And then we get down to verse 12. When they had all had enough to eat, he said to his disciples, gather the pieces that are left over, let nothing be wasted. So they gathered them and filled the 12 baskets with the pieces of 5 barley loaves left over by those who had eaten. And the people saw the miraculous sign that Jesus did. After the people saw the miraculous sign that Jesus did, they began to say, surely this is the prophet who is to come into the world. This was the prophet that we were told about, right? This is who we've been waiting for. I mean, look what he did. Who else can do this? He fed us all. Verse 15, Jesus, knowing that they intended to come and make him king by force, withdrew again to a mountain by himself. So here we are, somewhat early in Jesus' ministry. He feeds these people. He's healed people. He's done some amazing things. They see this. Jesus knows that they intend to make him king by force. Jesus came to this earth to do the will of the Father, right? To pay for our sins, but ultimately to be king. That's what he came to do, to be king. And here he has at least 5,000 people ready to make him king, and he says, no. This is not the time, and he withdraws. What gives? What gives? He came to be king. He's got a pretty good following right here. And you could see, you would understand why they would want him to be king, right? I mean, he just fed a bunch of people. That's pretty good. If you can take a small amount of food and feed a bunch of people, that's a pretty good person to have as king. You know, I mean, 5,000 people, that's like a small army right there. But if you have Jesus as your leader, it's like a great army. Because guess what? If you're wounded in battle, hurry up. Get him back to Jesus. He can heal him. You're good. Now get back out there and keep fighting. 5,000 easily is more like 10,000 or 20,000 or 100,000 when you can miraculously heal the wounded or even raise those who have been killed in battle from the dead and send them back out to fight. I mean, how are you going to lose? And not only that, I mean, he can control a storm. He can control the weather. So, hey, make it thunder and lightning on their side while we're sitting over here in nice weather, Jesus. That could help us fight our battles. And, hey, we need to feed the troops. Do we need to bring a lot of food? Nah, man, just a couple muffins and Jesus is going to feed all of us. I mean, you could understand if you had Jesus, your king, the things that you could do, that what you could accomplish. Rome would not stand a chance in a battle if Jesus is leading the way, right? So it makes sense that they would want to make Jesus king. But Jesus says no. He gets away from there. He goes up on the mountainside. And they got to be, you know, where's he at? I would just love to have seen that situation when they're all looking for him and he's not there anymore. Like, where did he go, right? Because they want to make him king, but it was not time. And see, that's just it. They want to make him king. Why? Why do they want to make him king? Well, the same reason they're looking for him at all. Right? Yes, there definitely were some that wanted to hear what he had to say. There were some that wanted to learn. There were some that wanted to know about the Father and see what it means to truly be a disciple. But there were a lot of them, though, that were there because of what he could do. And not just what he could do, but what he could do for them. He can feed me. He can heal me. He can take care of my needs. And there are still today people that go to Jesus for what he can do for us in that way. We're going to fast forward now in the book of John to chapter 12. And in John chapter 12, we see that it is now time for Jesus to become king. Okay? But he doesn't do it on their own, the people's terms. They want to make him king, but that's not how it works. All right? We don't make Jesus king. It's time now for Jesus to become king. And so in John chapter 12, we have what we normally call Palm Sunday. The Sunday before he's going to go to the cross, and Jesus is coming into Jerusalem, and, you know, and he's riding on that donkey into Jerusalem. And here's what we read starting in verse 12. The next day, the great crowd that had come for the feast, for the Passover, of course, heard that Jesus was on his way to Jerusalem. They had heard about Jesus. You imagine people from all over would have been making their way to Jerusalem for the Passover. You think this Jesus guy will be there? Hey, I heard he's the Messiah. Did you hear about the time he raised Lazarus? Did you hear how he fed the people? And they're coming and they want to see. And they're thinking, hey, you know, he could be the Messiah. He could be the king of Israel that we've been waiting for. They took palm branches and went out to meet him. So here he comes riding in on the donkey. They come out of the city to meet him, to welcome him into the city. And they're saying, Hosanna, blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord. Blessed is the King of Israel. They are saying he is King of Israel. You can understand why this would be a problem for the Jewish leaders and for the Roman leaders in that city at that time. To have someone come in who is a king, who is not put into place by Caesar, could cause some big problems. This is a revolution that's happening right here. This is a rebellion. And Jesus is coming in. And of course, he has no army, right? I mean, what does he have? He's on a donkey, which is a symbol of peace. He's not coming in on a stallion. He's coming in and they're saying, Jesus is king. And in this moment, we find Jesus not running away and hiding. He's not going up on the mountainside. He is being welcomed in as king. This is his triumphal entry into his kingship. Verse 15 is a quote from the prophet Zechariah. Do not be afraid, O daughter of Zion. See, your king is coming seated on a donkey's colt. And that this was prophesied. And now it was the time for Jesus to be made king. Back in chapter 6, it wasn't the time. And the people wanted him to be king for you know, maybe they weren't all righteous reasons. Maybe they were selfish reasons, but they wanted to make him king and it wasn't time. But now we see that it is time. And then we flip over a few more chapters in the book of John to chapter 19 when Jesus is talking with Pilate and he's on trial. We'll go to John 19 and there's some back and forth there, but we're going to go to verse 12. From then on, Pilate tried to set Jesus free, but the Jews kept shouting, "If you let this man go, you are no friend of Caesar. Anyone who claims to be a king opposes Caesar." You see, this is the same argument that they make later on when we read in Acts, earlier when we read in the book of Acts in 17, when the Jews were saying, hey, they're saying this guy Jesus is king, but we know Caesar's king. They're going against Caesar. And that's the same argument they were making to Pilate at Jesus' trial. That, hey, if you're a friend of Caesar, there's no way you can let this guy go free because he's claiming to be a king. So understand that. And even in all the trial, Jesus never once tells Pilate, I'm not king. He doesn't do that. Jesus is not shying away from the fact that he is king of Israel, king of the Jews, ultimately king of all. He's not shying away from that. But this is the accusation that the Pharisees and the Jewish leaders are making. Anyone who claims to be a king opposes Caesar. When Pilate heard this, he brought Jesus out and sat down on the judge's seat at a place known as the stone pavement, which in Aramaic is Gabbatha. It was the day of preparation of Passover week, about the sixth hour. Here is your king, Pilate said to the Jews. But they shouted, take him away. Take him away. Crucify him. Shall I crucify your king? Pilate asked. And here's what they say. We have no king but Caesar. It's interesting that the Pharisees would have accused Jesus of blasphemy at other points during his ministry. And here they are actually blaspheming, claiming Caesar as their king instead of God, right? Instead of someone that God put on the throne, they're claiming Caesar as their king. We have no king but Caesar. They would choose to have Caesar as their king, who did not fear their God, who was oppressive. They would rather have him than have Jesus, okay? All right. And of course, Pilate hands him over to be crucified. Here's what I want us to get out of this. And you can go ahead and flip ahead to get ready when we get to Philippians chapter 2, which Vince read for us a minute ago. Here's what I want us to get. Jesus came to be king. We know that. He didn't come to be king how we want him to be king. He didn't come to be king because, you know, he could feed us or because he can heal us or because he can provide for us or do all these things. Yes, Jesus can do all of those things. But we don't take Jesus and make him king. Even when he was coming into Jerusalem that Sunday before his death, the people there were not the ones that were going to make him king. That's not how it works. I think sometimes we go to Jesus and we want to make him our king because of what he's going to do for us, or at least what we think he's going to do for us. And if I'll bow down to Jesus because he can do this. And sometimes it's selfish reasons. Sometimes it is righteous reasons. We go to Jesus because we recognize of who he is and what he's done. But here's what I think we need to understand. We do not make Jesus king. Okay? Jesus is king. God put him in that position. We recognize that Jesus is king. If we don't recognize that he's king, or we don't make him our king, that doesn't change the fact that he still is the king. Nothing changes that. What changes is whether or not we recognize it and we bow to it. The sermon's not very long this morning because the point is quick, and I really want us to just understand this concept, because I think we have this way of looking at it that is very egotistical and very selfish in a lot of ways, that I make Jesus king. And that's wrong. You don't make Jesus king. Jesus was already made king when he followed the will of his Father in heaven. Philippians chapter 2, starting in verse 5, your attitude should be the same as that of Christ Jesus, who being in very nature God, did not consider equality with God something to be grasped, but made himself nothing. That Jesus had equality with God, but he did not hold on to it. He actually let go of it to make himself nothing. Taking the very nature of a servant, being made in human likeness, and being found in appearance as a man, he humbled himself and became obedient to death, even death on a cross. That Jesus let go of everything he had with God to become a human. Not just to become a human, but to die. Not just to die, but to actually die on a cross. Verse 9, therefore, because of that, because Jesus gave up his place, because he humbled himself, because he did what the Father in heaven wanted him to do for you and for me so that we could have salvation, because Jesus did this, verse 9, God exalted him to the highest place. God took him from the tomb and put him at the highest place, put him on the throne, not just over Israel, but over all of creation. That God put him at the highest place and gave him the name that is above every name. It is God who made Jesus king, not us. We don't get to vote for Jesus. We can pledge our allegiance to him, we can recognize his position, and we can bow to him. Or we can be like the Pharisees and appeal to another king that is in no way compared to Jesus. You see, Jesus was king. He was king. He was anointed before he went to the cross. He was king elect, if you will, right? He was anointed to be king. When I say elected by God, not elected by man. And the Pharisees did not recognize it then. They appealed to Caesar. They wanted Caesar as their king. Who Caesar did not love them. Caesar didn't care about them, right? They were a nuisance to him. He didn't care about them. But they appealed to Caesar. They wanted Caesar as king. And then in Acts chapter 17, later on, when Jesus is king and does sit on the throne, those leaders still were saying, Caesar is king. We can do that now. We can appeal to something other than Jesus and say, that's our king. He's not our king. But guess what? It doesn't change the fact of where Jesus is at. He's still on the throne, whether we want to recognize it or not. That is who he is. Or we can acknowledge it and we can bow. We can put our knees to the ground, we can put our foreheads to the ground, and we can show our allegiance to the actual real king. And here's the thing, and this is what we're about to read next, that it's going to happen regardless. It's going to happen regardless. That your knees will hit the ground and you will recognize that Jesus is king. The question is, are you going to do it now? Are you going to recognize the king that rode in on the donkey who came in peace? Or are you going to do it when he's coming back on a stallion with the sword at his side? And then you're going to do it and you may not get the same outcome as the king riding in on the donkey. When you get the one who's coming back and he's going to slay his enemies, then, are you going to recognize them then when it just might be too late? Or are you going to do it now? Let's read the rest of Philippians chapter 2. God gave him the name that is above every name. Verse 10, that at the name of Jesus, every knee should bow in heaven and on earth and under the earth, and every tongue confess that Jesus Christ is Lord to the glory of God the Father. It's going to happen. Every knee will bow to Jesus. We just get the opportunity and the privilege to say that now, to acknowledge that Jesus is king now before he comes back, which is prophesied and said that he will in Revelation, that he will come back and he will slay his enemies and he will cast those who are not with him away into the fiery lake. I don't want to be in that crowd. I don't want to have to be shown that Jesus is king when I didn't believe it. Or when even if I did believe it but didn't acknowledge it. You say Jesus is king. You confess Jesus is king as the Messiah, as the Lord, as the Son of God. And you're baptized and you're a new creation. And you live like he is the king in obedience to him. Your life mimics his life. You don't serve other kings. You don't worship other kings. You don't elevate and put yourself as king. But you recognize that he is king and you serve him. And the thing about that is unlike Caesar, we have a king that does love us, that can provide for us and does provide for us, who has saved us from what no other king could save us from death and from our own sins. That is a king that we have that actually does love us. That's the king that I want to bow down and worship. That's a king we are privileged and honored to get to do, church. Jesus is king, whether we acknowledge it or not. But let's acknowledge it. Let's confess. Let's tell others. Let's live in a way that shows what we believe. He's a good king and we love him. If you have not made Jesus your king, you can do that. Look, I kind of contradicted what I just said. Not that you made him king. If you haven't recognized that Jesus is king, it's in our terminology, I'm sorry. If you have not made Jesus your king, you have that opportunity to do so now. Right? Confess that he is king, to be baptized, to come up living in his kingdom. It's a beautiful thing. I believe we are going to have a baptism this morning. And I'm going to turn it over now to Stanley, who's going to lead our song of invitation.